sort of clear. First is the miniaturization. So you're going to get smaller and smaller and smaller with all the advantages on there. They're more rugged when you do that. The other is that the use of microprocessors. All instruments, virtual all instruments, are going to have built into. They're going to feed directly into computers, and everything will be automated. We have now, for example, we have a Fourier transform spectrophotometer that has built into it a lasers. It has built an interferometer. We control the position of the mirror to a fraction of a millionth of an inch in there, entirely 300 times a second. I think we do this and that. Here is a very sophisticated, complex. There isn't a single manual control on the whole thing. So that's what's coming in. We're going to take the user out of the loop in there and be a robot type of a thing. And I see that extending to here. Even on our pH meter, we're getting smaller. I'm surprised the market still keeps up for pH meters. We're coming up with new models all the time. We've got a new one, which I haven't yet seen. I just had described to us. It's a little thing that incorporates the electrode and everything all together, and a thing about an inch and a half diameter about this large. I'm waiting to see one of them. But anyway, the market continues as a result, possibly, of new applications and new models that lend their application that the older models are not suitable for.
Is there, coupled with this increase in the complexity of the instrument, has there been a shift in the way that the ideas come, or is it still very much getting a very strong user-driven input that people are...
Well, I think all those factors are there. We have customers. So for example, go back to the Hill pots. You had customers who want to run these things alongside of a hot exhaust pipe, for example, and you couldn't use organic. That's the case where it's feedback from the customer. That led us over to Cermet. Once you got this silkscreen technique, that lowered the cost much in there. That opens up getting into resistors and all sorts of, not only resistors, we also make a lot of AC-DC converters and things like that could be made with this silkscreen thing. So once you start a new technique, why, the other thing open up. Then sometimes a guy will sit back in the corner and come up with a idea out of the blue, and that I don't think I could assign quantitatively what fraction of the new products are going to come this way or that way. They're all at work. And the pressures of competition, of course, stimulate you to come up with something new all the time.
You mentioned earlier that the man from Zeiss couldn't believe that.
No, he was a man from Sieber Geiger. It was a guy, a Zeiss Spectre, yeah.
Yeah. Looking now internationally, where is the competition coming from in instrumentation?
In chemical analysis instrumentation, the chief competition is Japan. They're coming in, and more so than Germany or England or Switzerland. I'm surprised a little bit that the Germans haven't been doing more in here. No, but Japan is really on the make in many fields. You know, another strategy, maybe I'm responsible to some extent for Japan being in this semiconductor business. I'd tell you that story.
Yeah.
I'm filling you a lot of irrelevant material, but this is all true story. Back in 1956, I was president of the Los Angeles Chamber of Commerce, and Tokyo was celebrating its 500th anniversary that year by having a World Mayor's Conference. And Mayor Norris Paulson of Los Angeles was ill, and he couldn't go. So he asked me to go as the president of Los Angeles Chamber of Commerce, his deputy. So I went over there. Well, you know, protocol is you have to take a gift from over there. So what to take? Well, believe it or not, the Chamber of Commerce decided that the thing to take was a transistor radio. At that time, they were brand new. There was only one on the market made by Zenith. That's all they had. And they got one of these, about this modest size radio. And they put it in a beautiful leather case, embossed the seal of City of Los Angeles, so on, something like that. I took it over. Well, when I got over there, I won't bore the details, but I was late. I missed the grand opening ceremony because the plane was late and so, but anyway, I got over there. They have a protocol officer come around and find out what are the gifts that the guests are going to give, and then they determine the pecking order. Well, I was hoping I was going to be pretty well down the list because I didn't know what the procedure was, and particularly since I was late for the missed the opening things, I missed the instructions that they may have given to the other people. So then when I saw some of the gifts that other were given, for example, the mayor of Tehran had a beautiful bowl out of woven strands of silver and gold, and I thought, my gosh, this radio thing. Believe it or not, this was selected as the number one thing. And I had to go for it. They had a procession, first of all, and also given this radio. Well, it was because of novelty that they had never seen a radio, never heard of it before. So I often wonder whether that was what kicked off the semiconductor business. Because only a short time after this, Toshiba, with whom we had a joint venture operation, became the world's largest manufacturer at that time of germanium transistors, but that set her off. Well, all these little pieces fit in. You see that nothing is very important in itself, but still they happen, and you can't say, I won't know, for example, to what extent, if any, that stimulated their technical people to say, hey, we better get into the radio business. And we'll come back to computers now. Well, the same way, these little dips and sips we make, you see, go into computer thing. Here again, we had no idea of ever getting into the cheap electronic component business, but we're there.
Mm. Yeah. Yes. Well, those aspects of unpredictability are very, very interesting.
I don't know. Well, I can predict a little bit in the near term on here. For example, we're going to have, particularly in the field, we're going on the healthcare thing, and diagnostic techniques are going to rely more and more on the chemical identification of hormones and neurotransmitters and things like that that either induce diseases or are the byproducts of diseases, so that, as you know, we cannot pick up cancers of different type by the metabolic products that we can pick up. This is just an infancy that's going to grow. So the whole nature of medical diagnosis is going to change, in my opinion. It means the nature of instrumentation, too. We're going to have instruments that will do these things and not only measure these things, but they'll measure several of them. They'll have a computer in there that'll tell you what the significance is, and they'll come up with a diagnosis. They'll come up with a therapy. Hmm. All this is going to be done by unskilled people, technicians, something like that. So it's going to revolutionize the field of medicine. I think that's for sure. We're so deeply involved in that now that I can feel very certain about that.
Yeah.
Now, what goes beyond that, I don't know. I look back, I gave a talk a year or so ago at Illinois on industry-university relations, and I try to point out that I think that our universities are antiquated. We still stick to a four-year course for why, no reason other than that's why we've always done it. And it's just ridiculous to think you can cram an education into a person of 4 years that's going to last very long. Point out my own case here. I was an educated guy back in the 20s. Bachelor's, master's, doctor's in chemistry, something like that, you know. I'd never even heard of penicillin or streptomycin. I'd never even heard of a transistor, integrated circuit, any of these things that are commonplace now. But my point is that what they should do in school is teach people how to learn and then make it easy for everybody at all stages of life to go back into the educational system and continue the learning process. But then when I look back, say, now that was 50 years ago, right, yeah. We have more people doing research now than ever before, so that discoveries are bound to increase in number. No reason to believe that research suddenly becomes sterile. So what the new developments are, just as we didn't know what a transistor was, I don't know what X is going to be 10, 20 years out the road, but we know there's going to be something just as, maybe we'll be harnessing the internal forces of the nucleus, who knows. So we can project only a year or two or three into the future to see what we can do.
Well, very good. Jeff, have we
we've covered most of the territory we wanted to today. It's been a long and eventful way back from Cullom, Illinois, where we started when you were here in April. And I'd like to thank you again for taking the time to talk to us.
You've got a lot of irrelevant material in here.
There's a lot of nuggets in there as well, though. And I think the story is a fascinating one, that as Jeff says, it's a long way from Cullom, and I think part of the aspect of all of this is making it more known to people what it is possible to achieve. That this is an inspiration.
There's more to science than just the science itself. Science is carried on by human beings. You have all the frailties of human beings and all the other daily problems and like that that are woven into these things. Incidentally, I thank very much for that information about that AA noise and Mulliken. Use steals 14 weeks in candy. I hadn't known that before.
I thought you might be interested.
Yeah, that was great.
Well, let's just take a minute's break. Perhaps we'll put the air conditioner on again and...